Welcome to The Word for Today, featuring the Bible teaching of Pastor Chuck Smith, founder of the Calvary Chapel Movement. This radio program is a verse-by-verse study through the entire Bible. And on today's edition of The Word for Today, Pastor Chuck continues with Daniel Interprets the King's Dream, as we pick up in Daniel chapter 5, verse 8. And now with today's message, here's Pastor Chuck.
Then came in all the king's wise men, but they could not read the writing, nor make known to the king the interpretation thereof. And then was King Belshazzar greatly troubled, and his countenance changed in him, and his lords were astonished. Now the queen, that is the queen mother, by reason of the words of the king and his lords, came into the banquet house. And the queen spake and said, O king, live forever. Let not thy thoughts trouble thee, nor let thy countenance be changed. There is a man in the kingdom, in whom is the spirit of the holy gods. And in the days of your father, light and understanding and wisdom, like the wisdom of the gods, was found in him, whom the king Nebuchadnezzar, thy father, the king, I say, thy father, made the master of the magicians and the astrologers and the Chaldeans and the soothsayers. For as much as an excellent spirit and knowledge and understanding, the interpreting of dreams and the showing of hard sentences and the dissolving of doubts were found in the same Daniel, whom the king named Belteshazzar. Now let Daniel be called, and he will show you the interpretation. Then was Daniel brought in before the king, and the king spake and said unto Daniel, Art thou that Daniel which art of the children of the captivity of Judah, whom the king my father brought out of Jewry? I have even heard of thee that the spirit of gods is in thee, and that light and understanding and excellent wisdom is found in thee. Now the wise men, the astrologers, have been brought in before me, that they should read this writing and make known unto me the interpretation thereof. But they could not show the interpretation of the thing. And I have heard of thee that you can make interpretations and dissolve doubts. Now if you can read the writing and make known to me the interpretation, you will be clothed with scarlet, you'll have a chain of gold about your neck, you'll be the third ruler in the kingdom. Interesting reputation that Daniel possesses. In him dwells the spirit of the holy gods. A man of excellent wisdom, understanding. Then Daniel answered and said before the king, keep your gifts. Give your rewards to someone else. Yet I will read the writing unto the king and make known unto him the interpretation. The gifts of God are not really to be bought. It is really wrong for a man to receive hire or to be hired to do the work of God in that sense. Jesus spoke about the hirelings. And for a man to sell these God-given capacities would be a wrong thing. It would be the prostituting of the gifts and the works of God. That is why Daniel said, keep your gifts, give them to someone else. I don't need them. I'll tell you what it says. I'll interpret it for you. But before he interprets it, he's going to give the king a little message. Now, at this point, Daniel must be close to 90 years old, because the 70 years of the captivity are almost over. He was probably a teenager, maybe late teens, when he was taken captive. So the 70 plus the late teens puts him up close to the 90 mark. Probably 85 to 90 years old, somewhere in there. And he takes now this opportunity to preach a stern message to this young king. O thou king, the Most High God gave to Nebuchadnezzar, your father, a kingdom and majesty and glory and honor. And for the majesty that he gave him, all of the people, nations, and languages trembled and feared before him. and whom he would, he slew. The absolute authority that Nebuchadnezzar possessed. Whom he would, he kept alive. Whom he would, he set up, and whom he would, he put down. But when his heart was lifted up, and his mind was hardened by pride, he was deposed from his kingly throne, and they took his glory from him. They took it, these watchers from heaven. And he was driven from the sons of men, and his heart was made like the beast, and he was dwelling with the wild asses, and they fed him with grass like the oxen. And his body was wet with the dew of heaven till he knew that the Most High God ruled in the kingdom of men, and that he appointeth over it whomsoever he will. And thou, his son, O Belshazzar, you have not humbled your heart, though you knew all of this. Now, Belshazzar was well aware of the things that happened to his grandfather, the madness that he experienced until the seven seasons had passed over him, and his restoration, and the proclamation that his grandfather made upon restoration, that there is no God in all the earth like the God of Daniel, who is able to set up those whom he would and bring down those whom he would, and sets in authority those whom he will. Belshazzar knew all of this. And Daniel is reminding him that you are sinning against the knowledge that you have. You know better. But you have lifted up yourself against the Lord of heaven, and they have brought the vessels of his house before thee, and you and your lords, your wives, your concubines have drunk the wine in them, and you have praised the gods of silver, gold, brass, iron, wood, and stone, which see not, nor hear, nor know. And the God in whose hand thy breath is, and in whose all of thy ways hast thou not glorified. Now, here was the man's sin. He was praising these gods of wood, stone, gold, brass, silver. The gods that they had made with their own hands. Gods that could not see, gods that could not hear. Insensate little idols, gods that knew nothing. He was praising them, yet blaspheming the God in whose hand his very breath was. That, of course, is an interesting statement. The God in whose hand thy very breath is. The lungs are an involuntary muscle. That is, they are not attached to the skeleton, and you do not have to think to breathe. It's something that is done automatically. Now, there are some people, very, very few, that are afflicted with an extremely rare disease, and that is they have to think to breathe. And it's a very tragic thing because they sleep very fitfully. Actually, they've monitored them during their sleep, and they sleep for about 30 seconds, and then they wake up and take a breath and then sleep for another 30 seconds. And it's a very frightening kind of a thing because they do not breathe except by the control of the mind. They have to think to breathe. But you don't. You can be thankful for that. God controls the breath. It's interesting. God controls the heart, the heartbeat. God controls those things that are vital to your life. God controls. He lets you control other things, other muscles of your body. But those that involve life, God put on this, what we call the involuntary system. That is, they don't take the mind to control them. You don't have to think to make your heart beat. It's something that is done automatically for your lungs to work, for your kidneys to function, things of this nature. Those things upon which your life depends, God doesn't leave with something as feeble as your mind to control. The God in whose hand your very breath is, your stinking breath. Wine. You ever smell the wino's breath? Sour. Yet the God in whose hand your very breath is. Paul the Apostle, in talking about God to the philosophers on Mars Hill, said, I want to declare to you, I want to talk to you about the unknown God. For in him we live and we move and we have our being. God is much closer to people than they realize. But we need to become more conscious of the all-prevailing and pervading presence of God. As David said, where can I flee from your presence? If I ascend into heaven, thou art there. If I descend into hell, thou art there. If I take the wings and I flee to the uttermost parts of the earth, even there you surround me. He was conscious of the presence of God wherever he might be. One of the fallacies of the people have always been that of localizing God. And so they had gods of the cities, and they thought that this God dwelt in this city, another God dwells in the next city. Or God is being put in an idol, and the worshiping of an idol, it's the localizing of God. He's there. Let's go and visit our God. It's always wrong to localize God. God cannot be localized. He isn't confined to one area. Now, we, even in church, many times fall into this same kind of a fallacy of localizing God in church. And so often we'll hear prayers being offered. Oh, Lord, we're so thankful to have this opportunity to come into your presence this morning and sit here before you. As though we weren't in the presence of God when we woke up. We weren't in the presence of God as we were driving here, but at last we've arrived and we come into the presence. Oh, let's be quiet now. Let's look sober now, or let's not joke now, or, you know. And we have that tendency of localizing God so that we're not aware and conscious of the fact that God is with us wherever we are. In whatever circumstances we are, he hears us. He sees us when we think that we are hiding. We so often are with those blasphemers of Psalm 71 who say, doth God know? Hath, you know, God seen? And we think that we can hide ourselves from God because God is localized. And so if I do my evil down the street, God won't know it. I just don't do my evil when I get in church. But not so. God is not localized. The very God in whose hand thy breath is. Now, gods who had no breath, gods who could not see, the little insensate gods, they were glorifying and praising them. But the God who controlled their breath, they did not glorify. And for this reason, that part of the hand was sent from him, and this writing was written. And this is the writing that was written, meeni, meeni, tekel, upharsin. And this is the interpretation. Meeni, God hath numbered thy kingdom and finished it. You've had it. Tekel, thou art weighed in the balances, and you've come up short. Perez, thy kingdom is divided and will be given to the Medes and the Persians. What an awesome declaration from God. Your kingdom is numbered. It's finished. You've been weighed in the balances. You've come up short. Your kingdom is going to be taken from you and divided. The Medes and the Persians. Then commanded Belshazzar, and they clothed Daniel with scarlet. They put a chain of gold about his neck. They made a proclamation concerning him that he should be the third ruler in the kingdom for the next few hours. In that night was Belshazzar, the king of the Chaldeans, slain. And Darius the Mede took the kingdom, being about 62 years old. Now it pleased Darius to set over the kingdom 120 princes, which should be over the whole kingdom. Now that the Persian, Medo-Persian Empire has conquered over the Babylonian Empire, Darius, who was co-reigning with Cyrus, set over the kingdom 120 princes, and there were three presidents, of whom Daniel was the first, that the princes might give accounts unto them, and the king should have no damage. So Daniel immediately moved into a position of extremely high authority within this Medo-Persian Empire, being made one of the three presidents and the head over them. Then this Daniel was preferred above the presidents and princes because an excellent spirit was in him, and the king thought to set him over the entire realm. But then the other presidents and the princes sought to find an occasion against Daniel concerning the kingdom, but they could find no occasions nor faults, for as much as he was faithful, neither was there any error or fault found in him. Then said these men, "We will not find any occasion against this Daniel, except we find it against him concerning the law of his God." This guy is just too good. We're never going to be able to trip him up unless it be with the law of his God. Then these presidents and princes assembled together to the king and said unto him, "King Darius, live forever. All of the presidents of the kingdom and the governors and the princes and the counselors and the captains have consulted together to establish a royal statute and to make a firm decree that whosoever shall ask a petition of any god or man for 30 days, except from you, O king, he shall be cast into the den of lions." This, of course, would be, a guy would have to be stupid to make this kind of a proclamation. No one can ask anybody for anything for 30 days except me. Now, they were, of course, playing up to his pride. Flattery, you know, you're so great and all. The people need to know how great you are. So to demonstrate this, let's make this proclamation that throughout the entire kingdom, no one can pray to any god or ask anybody for anything except you, so that they'll know, you know, how great you are and all. "Now, O king, establish the decree." Sign the writing. They had made this proclamation, brought it into him. "Now sign it, seal it, that it cannot be changed according to the law of the Medes and the Persians, which alters not. Wherefore, King Darius, sign the writing and the decree." Now, notice that the decree once signed could not be changed even by Darius the king. It shows that his rule was not as strong as was Nebuchadnezzar's. Nebuchadnezzar could make any decree and change any decree. He could do anything. He had a complete control. Whom he would, he, you know, saved alive. Whom he would, he killed. I mean, he just had absolute control. With this, he was controlled by the decrees. "Now, when Daniel knew that the writing was signed," I like this, Daniel knew that the king had signed the thing, "he went into his house, and his windows being open in his chamber toward Jerusalem, he kneeled upon his knees three times a day and prayed and gave thanks before his God as he was accustomed to do. And these men being assembled found Daniel praying and making supplication before his God." Now, in the book of 2 Chronicles, when Solomon had dedicated the temple that he had built unto the Lord, Solomon prayed a beautiful prayer at the dedication. And in a part of the prayer of Solomon, he said, "O Lord, if these people turn their back against thee and they begin to worship and serve other gods, and they be taken captive by their enemies. If they shall turn toward this place and pray unto thee, then hear thou from thy holy place in heaven and answer their prayer and deliver them from their captivity. And we remember God responded to this prayer of Solomon by saying, if my people, which are called by my name, will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then will I hear from heaven and heal their nation and so forth. So that Daniel was taken captive. But even as Solomon prayed, Lord, if they turn toward this place and pray, and so he was turning towards the holy place in the temple. Now, that is why the Jews today go to the Western Wall and pray facing the Western Wall. Because on the other side of the Western Wall, somewhere, the Holy of Holies once stood in Solomon's temple.
We'll return with more of our verse-by-verse Bible study in the book of Daniel on our next broadcast, as Pastor Chuck continues to teach through the Bible. And we do hope you'll make plans to join us. But right now, if you'd like to order a copy of today's message, simply order Daniel 5 through 6 when visiting thewordfortoday.org. And while you're there, be sure to browse the many additional biblical resources by Pastor Chuck. You can also subscribe to the Word for Today podcast or sign up for our email subscription. Once again, that's thewordfortoday.org. For those of you wishing to call, our toll-free number is 1-800-272-WORD, and our office hours are Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Pacific Time. Again, that's 1-800-272-9673. If you prefer to write, our mailing address is The Word for Today, P.O. Box 8000, Costa Mesa, California, 92628. And now, on behalf of The Word for Today, we'd like to thank all of you who share in supporting this ministry with your prayers and financial support. And be sure to join us again next time as Pastor Chuck continues his verse-by-verse study through the Bible. That's right here on the next edition of The Word for Today. And now, once again, here's Pastor Chuck.
May the Lord be with you and bless and keep you in His love through the power of His Holy Spirit as you are enriched in your walk with Jesus Christ day by day as He ministers to you His strength, His power. And may you begin to experience more and more in your own life that power of God's love transforming you and changing you and making you into His image by His Spirit, which dwells within you. In Jesus' name.
This program has been sponsored by Calvary Chapel of Costa Mesa, California.
Undoubtedly, one of the most glaring signs that our society is in trouble is the breakdown of the family unit. Marriages just aren't making it today, and kids are suffering as they watch the breakup of their homes. Those marriages still holding together are often plagued by conflict and turmoil, making the home a battleground instead of a refuge. That's why The Word for Today would like to present Pastor Chuck Smith's Marriage and Family MP3, where Pastor Chuck discusses basic biblical principles to keep a family's love alive. Each member of the family has a different set of needs and responsibilities. And when you know and apply God's principles, everyone in the family can experience real peace, real joy, and an agape love. To order your copy of the Marriage and Family MP3 by Chuck Smith, call The Word for Today at 800-272-WORD or visit us online at thewordfortoday.org.